what a nice introduction. I'm Christy C. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Germantown Noon in Germantown, Tennessee. And my sobriety date is April 19th, 1999. I have a sponsor, Sherry S., and she keeps me on the straight and narrow, which I'm very grateful for. And I want to thank you all for inviting me. I'm very honored. Montego Roundup is a big deal. And Louise A. used to be my sponsor, and she was still living, and she's one of the great old-timers. And so when you speak at the Montego Roundup, everybody's like, yeah, it's pretty cool. So I'm really honored to be here, and thank you, Milton, for asking me. I grew up in this neck of the woods in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I've been in Memphis for about 22 years. But I grew up there, and that's where I had my first drink and my last drink. My first drink was when I was 14. My dad's sour mash whiskey, which was not very good. And then I moved on to beer at a Baptist church hayride. So I was pretty rebellious and liked to push that envelope a little bit. I'm from a traditional, dysfunctional family. My parents, they are still married, and they'll celebrate their 50-year anniversary next summer, which is huge. But like everybody, our family was kind of dysfunctional. I'm the only known alcoholic in my family. I'm special. Real special. But it is a Baptist family, and so I know there's probably some out there somewhere. We just don't know about it. I'm the middle child of three, and I grew up in a very loving home. I knew my mom and dad loved me. But my dad was kind of a tough guy, and I always wanted him to tell me he loved me, he was proud of me, and I never quite got that, probably because I was causing lots of trouble. So, I tried to get attention and kind of went about it the wrong way a lot of times. But we grew up in the Baptist church, and my grandfather was the preacher of the Burning Bush Baptist Church, actually was Burning Bush Baptist Church, in Georgia. And we used to go over there and go to church, and I used to be so scared because he would yell, and I didn't like going, and I just knew I was going to go to hell. And my brother and sister, they also sat and listened to sermons. They never heard they were going to hell. I asked them this. I said, where did I get that? So I guess it's true that, alcoholism is a disease of perception. But I just knew I was going to hell, and I was bad. And so I tried to hide from God a lot, and throughout my life, when things happened to me, I knew I was being punished. And that happened quite often. My childhood was pretty normal. When I got to high school, I went to a Catholic high school, Notre Dame High School in Chattanooga, and it was the best time of my life. We had so much fun. We drank. It was very socially acceptable to drink there. And we didn't think anything was wrong with it. But looking back, I know that God was looking over me because we'd have parties on mountains, like almost as tall as Montego Mountain, and we got home. We drive home. We get home. And it still amazes me today. It scares me to death to think about it because I've got kids out there driving now. But so high school was good, but I drank a lot. And when I drank, I blacked out. And I thought that was normal. A lot of my friends blacked out too, but I didn't know till I got in the rooms that really wasn't a good thing. That's probably a good sign that something's not quite right. But I remember waking up thinking, God, what did I do? What did I do last night? And then I'd call some friends and they would kind of fill me in. I'd kind of ask some questions and they would kind of fill me in. And I knew if I wanted to go delve deeper. Most of the time I didn't want to delve deeper. So I had a pretty unremarkable, high school year, except for the partying. And then I went to college. And when I was a sophomore in college, I fell in love with this guy. And actually, when I was a freshman, I fell in love with him. And we had this love-hate relationship. My parents really didn't like him. But I kind of lived in la-la land. I just figured it was all going to work out somehow. And when I was a junior, we got married. And my dad was not happy. And my mom was not happy. And my mom said, you've got to finish college. You've got to have a degree. You've got to be able to support yourself. And I just knew somehow it was going to work out. They just didn't understand that I had it figured out. But so my husband and I moved to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. and it didn't work out. It didn't work out the way I thought it was going to. When I was pregnant with our first child, he was having an affair, and then when our son was born, he decided that he didn't want to be married anymore. So that kind of threw a rock in my pond, and so I was scared. And my parents said, come move back home, and I wouldn't move back home. I didn't want to be told anymore that I was wrong or I was bad. And so I stayed in Memphis and went back to school on a Pell Grant. And then I met husband number two. And we got married 6 weeks after we met, which is not a good thing. You know, I was, I guess I was 20, early 20s. And I met this man, and he was so wonderful and very charismatic, and he loved me. And I believed him. And he said that his wife had left him, and, you know, we were a match made in heaven, and I thought we were. So we got married, and we got home from the honeymoon, and it was like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And come to find out, he was very manic depressive. I just didn't date him long enough to see the cycle. I mean, seriously, basically, that's what it was. I thought, God, you know, and then we came home, and he was like, I can't believe I married you. And I was, so it was not good. So, but I was determined I was not going to be divorced again. I didn't want to be bad. I was so tired of being bad. And so I would go to church and I would pray, you know, God, please make him right. Please make it okay. And, you know, it just doesn't work that way sometimes. God doesn't bless our messes. But I thought, well, we took him to a psychiatrist, and he stayed in the hospital for a while, and they got him on medicine. So I thought, well, okay, he's on medicine, everything's fine. So I thought, if we'll have a baby, and then everything will be really good. That never works either. It's not really a good thing to do. So I had my second child, and then history kind of repeated itself, because when I was pregnant, he decided he wanted to have an affair, and he left too. So I didn't have a good luck with that, you know, I just didn't have good luck with that. And I always thought that, you know, I was being punished. Just as simple as that. So during this time, my first husband decided he wanted custody of my son. When my son was born, my whole life changed. He was the best thing that ever happened to me. And it was the first time that my dad, I really saw that he was proud of me. He was the first grandson. And he was so beautiful, just so beautiful. And I remember my dad held him up and said, he's a keeper, you know. And it was a really great day. And but anyway, so my first husband left me for this woman. And then when I was married to my second husband, he decided that he would be a better dad. And during this time, I was not drinking. I quit drinking, I guess, from the time I got married the first time. And I quit for almost 10 years. But I still had very alcoholic behavior. And we know from the book, it says, you know, the problem with the alcoholic is in the mind. And bottles are just a symptom. And that was so true. That's so true. I didn't know how to live life on life's terms. I was still trying to manipulate and figure out how to make it right and to reinvent my life. And when something would happen, I'd either move or get married or, you know, go back to school or get a job. And I never realized that the problem was me. I thought it was everybody else. It just won't do right. Anyway, my first husband sued me for custody, and I was terrified. I went through a year-long custody suit with the meanest attorney I could find in Memphis, and my husband didn't have any grounds, thankfully, and he didn't win. But that was, fear really set in with me then, that I was going to somehow lose my son, and I lived with a tape recorder on my phone for years. You know, I just had to protect myself. And during this time also, my second son was born. And he was born 6 weeks early, oops, with a hole in his stomach. And again, I thought, God, God's really punishing me. You know, why? Why is this? I didn't drink. I didn't do drugs. I didn't even use Equal. I was just real healthy. You know, I was real healthy, and I was a good mom. But it was really severe. And one of the doctors said, you know, he's probably not going to live. Don't have much hope. And it was really a miracle because the man who developed the surgery was at Le Bonheur, and he saved his life. This man had huge hands, and my little boy was this little, and I thought, how is he going to, you know, fix him? But he did. He stayed there for 6 weeks. And I remember sitting, and I was still at Baptist East, and I remember sitting in the maternity ward, and everybody was getting flowers and you know, and my baby was at Le Bonheur. And I just remember sitting in this pool of self-pity thinking, why me? You know, and I look back now and I think, thank God. Thank God he's a miracle. He's alive. But back then I couldn't see it. I just saw it as I was bad and I was being punished. And to make matters worse, I'd gotten real involved in the Baptist church. And I was part of this group, this Sunday school group, and one of the women wanted to know what I had done that God would punish me. And that just confirmed everything I always thought. You know, that God really was after me. And that all those messages I heard growing up that, you know, I really was bad. And my dad, you know, he didn't think a whole lot of me either growing up. I mean, I didn't think he did. He was verbally abusive, very verbally abusive. You know, that's certainly not why I'm an alcoholic, but it's part of my story. You know, I kind of turned away from God at that point. And then after I got divorced a second time, I moved into this little house, and I lived on the corner of a street. And so my backyard backed up to the neighbor's backyard, and I met the most wonderful man. Husband number three. And he had this little girl. He was holding her, and I thought, God, you know, all the good ones are taken, because I thought he was married to my sister-in-law, but he wasn't. He was free. And, you know, that was what I wanted. I wanted a husband. I wanted a partner. I wanted someone that, you know, that a family mattered to them. And I would see him. He'd braid her hair. And I thought that was so neat, because I'd never seen that. I'd never experienced that. Well, come to find out, this man was the father of that mean attorney. So I always said, you know, we could be on the Oprah show. My father-in-law was my attorney, but he had a file on me. You know, it's not every day that your father-in-law has a file on you. He knew lots of stuff about me, but, you know, luckily I didn't have lots of skeletons in my closet then. So anyway, Lucius and I met, and he was just the most wonderful man. And at this time, I'd finished school. I was almost finished in school. I'd gone back again on a Pell Grant to finish. And I had my two little boys, and had a big yard. It looked like Walden's Pond, and I was always out there working in the yard. And for some reason, Lucius would always show up at his brother's house next door. I always thought that was really neat. Till later on, I found out his brother would page him and said, the neighbor's outside, come over. But, you know, life was real busy, life was real hectic, but it was good. And I decided, after all this had happened, I told my friend of mine who was in church, I said, I met this man, he's so nice. And she said, well, before you go out with him anymore, I want you to come meet with my pastor. I said, well, okay. So we met at Bosco's, this little restaurant in Memphis. And he said to me, basically, some of it all was, if you end up getting married again, you're not a Christian. I mean, I'm not kidding you that, you know, I had had, you know, two husbands, and obviously I wasn't doing right, and I need to get right with God and do the right thing and go back to church and not get married, not date. And it was like surreal. And I thought, I will never step my foot back in church again. If this is what it's all about, I don't need this. So I also decided at that time I was going to be self-sufficient emotionally, financially, and I didn't need God. So I graduated from college and started working in an ad agency, and I loved it. And Lucius and I continued to date, and we got married. And at that point, we had three children with three different last names. And his mother was worried that I might have baggage. I was like, what's she talking about? You know, I deal with things so well. After my second divorce, I did start drinking again. And I picked up right where I left off. And also started smoking. But the drinking was every night. And I didn't think I had a problem. And I didn't for a while. But it got to be more and more. And having three kids with three different last names means you have three spouses, ex-spouses too. So our life was a little hectic. So blending that family, it was tough. And I had a hard time dealing with reality. I would come home from work, and he'd want to talk about bills, and I'd say, oh, I can't handle this. You know, just, I really didn't know how. I didn't know how to handle all this pressure. And it was just life. And I realized I really didn't know how to do life. But I thought, you know, if all these people weren't in my life, if I didn't have all these exes, And if I moved away, life would be better. So I took a geographic cure. I thought, well, you know, I love Lucius, but, you know, love sometimes isn't enough. And it was tough at our house. But mainly because I wasn't dealing with anything, and I was drinking a lot. He would come home sometimes and say, I'm so tired of finding my wife passed out on the sofa. And I was doing things like filling the wine bottle up with water so he wouldn't know, because he drank Heineken, so he didn't know how much I was drinking. And the people at the spirit shop, my little liquor store I go to, they all knew me, sent me Christmas cards, which I thought that was so cool. I thought, God, these people are really good in marketing. You know, they're really good. I was probably their best customer. And I would get off work, and they would have my wine ready for me. And in fact, we drove by there a couple years ago by that store, and my son said, that's where they used to give me all those balloons. Like, yeah. So anyway, I decided a geographic cure would be the answer, because it wasn't me, it was everybody else. No one was doing what they needed to do. It's just life was really, really rough. So I got a job in Atlanta and told my husband I was leaving. And he's like, you know, where did you come from? You know, where's my wife? He didn't know what had happened to me. And basically, I was starting to shut everybody out. So we moved to Atlanta, and Lucia stayed here, and we sold the house. And over the next 9 months, I hit a bottom that was like hell on earth. I had a big job at a big ad agency and thought I had made it. I was making lots of money. I had this really nice townhouse in Buckhead. My kids were going to great schools. And all of a sudden, I found that, you know, when you have a big job, you work lots of hours. I was working all the time. I never saw my kids. I had a nanny come in and watch them. I was drinking more and more. My oldest son at that time was 10, and he was so angry with me. And I thought, well, I don't understand why he's so angry. So I took him to the psychiatrist thinking he needed Prozac. He didn't need Prozac, but I really didn't understand. I said, let's fix this. He was mad that I had taken him out of his school and upset his life again. And I thought I was doing the right thing. I'd researched where we would go. I had found the best school, and they should just be happy. You know, I was doing whatever. And he didn't feel that way about it. And he was really angry at me, and he wanted to go live with his dad. At this time, his dad had moved to Atlanta. And I was like, there is no way you're moving in with your dad. And one day, I got fired from my job. I'd been drinking. I was doing stuff like, I took a Bloody Mary to work one time, thinking they would think it was tomato juice. They didn't fool them. They didn't fool them. I was stopping on the way home from work, and I had a wine cork in my car, and I would finish half a bottle before I even got home, which was like half a mile. Because I'd walk in that door, and I'd have to deal with reality. And my son, my oldest son, was so unhappy. And the nanny was telling me that he's calling his stepmom, saying he hates you. And, you know, this little child that loved me, you know, he didn't. He loved me, but he was so angry with me. And, you know, he didn't understand. I thought, he just doesn't understand. And I certainly can't tell him, you know, what his dad did and all that. Really, it didn't matter. I just wasn't being there for him emotionally. So, we started going to a mediator. I told his dad we'd go to a mediator instead of me, you know, giving him custody, because he said he was going to sue me. And he had lots of money then, and I didn't have a job. So we went to a mediator, and my son Rush said, I need to be in a more stable home. And he's only 10 years old. And I thought, God, I can't believe his dad told him to say that. Because really, in my brain, it was not an unstable home, you know? I was doing everything I could for them. But looking back on it now, it was very unstable. It was very unstable. I mean, I wasn't beating him up or, you know, going to bars or anything, but I wasn't there emotionally, and I just couldn't help him deal with problems. So one night we got in a big argument. He told me he hated me, and he was almost as tall as I was. And he just said he hated me, and he didn't want to live with me anymore. And his dad came over, and he basically, I ended up letting him go live with his dad. After that, I got another job and got fired right away, too. I was shutting down I just couldn't cope with life, and my drinking got worse. But when I lost my son, something snapped, and I just started drinking around the clock. The nanny, I still had her, but she would take my youngest son to school, and I would just lay on the sofa and drink. Lucius and I were talking at this time and trying to reconcile. Crazy as that seems, he really is a sane person. But I was laying on my sofa drinking all day, and my parents, I don't think they really understood how bad I'd gotten. They lived in Chattanooga, and they called me, and I passed out on the phone, but they came down to Atlanta, and they said, "You're moving in with us." And so I just said, "Whatever, I'll move in with you." So I went back to Chattanooga, and I lived in their basement in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee. I took my youngest son out of first grade and put him in a new school. And if anybody should be screwed up, it's him, because he's really been kind of jerked around. So I was around my family, and I was on unemployment, and I was buying wine with unemployment checks. And finally, the unemployment checks ran out. And I noticed they were starting to watch how much I was drinking. And so I started trying to hide it more and more. And one day, we'd gone to Florida as a family, and they had all gone out to eat dinner. And I said, "I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to play with Connor on the beach." Well, what I did, I stayed home and I drank. And when they came back from dinner, I was on the beach with Connor, and I was almost passed out. And they said, "If you don't get your act straight, we're going to take him away from you." And for some reason, I heard him. You know, for the first time, I heard him, and I realized maybe that I was the problem and that I did have a problem. So we went back to Chattanooga, and I decided I was just going to quit drinking. I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know anybody in AA. But what's, I think, a God thing today is that a friend of mine, the first girl I ever drank with, was back in Chattanooga. And she called me, and she'd just gotten into AA. Never known anybody. So the first girl I ever drank with took me to my first AA meeting. And I walked in, and I just felt like, people were talking about real stuff, about how they felt. And I always thought people were all together. It was just me on the inside that felt so not together. And people were talking about having fear and about all this stuff, and it just amazed me. I'd never experienced anything like people being really real. I'd always had these big walls up, and I wanted everybody to think that I was okay. So I'd make the outside look really good, whether it was spending too much money on clothes or whatever. But people were really sharing from their heart, and that just, it was huge for me. And everybody was really mad at me. My husband filed for divorce. I got divorce papers one day in Chattanooga, and his parents were not happy with me. My parents were not happy with me. My oldest son still wouldn't talk to me. At this time, they'd moved back to Nashville, so they were closer. But everything in my life was going to hell. And it was at that point when I realized I couldn't fix it that I surrendered. And this was before the AA meeting, so I really didn't know what surrender was, but I got on my knees and I said, "God, I can't fix it." And I just remember feeling this huge relief. I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do. And I just can't explain what it felt like, except to say I felt a sense of peace and that everything was going to be okay. So I got into AA meetings, and this old-timer there told me, he said, "You know," he goes, "a lot of people are going to throw the past up in your face, but you can't let it weigh you down. When they bring it up, just say, 'I can't change the past. I'm just trying to do the best I can today.'" And for some reason, that really stuck with me because I had a lot of past to deal with. And I was just like that tornado in the book, and I had ripped through people's lives. I was not proud of that, but I didn't know how to fix it. So I went to AA, and after about 3 months, I called my husband one day. We were out in the Hiawassee on a raft. I was with my mom and my dad and my youngest son, and it's about a 3-hour raft trip. So we're in the middle of the lake, halfway through, and all of a sudden I had this thought, "You're going to lose your husband." And I had this panicky feeling. Now, before that, I was pretty much like an emotional vegetable. I couldn't really feel anything. But for some reason, I heard that, and I was panicking. Even though he'd filed for divorce a month ago, I knew I had to get back home and call him. I realized that I was the problem, and he was really a good guy, and I loved him. And I certainly was not going to tell my parents there on that raft, or they would probably have drowned me. So we got through with the raft trip, and it took another hour to get home. And I called him up, and I said, "You probably don't want to talk to me." He goes, "You're probably right." And I said, "But I've had this realization that I'm an alcoholic." And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you weren't the problem. It was me." And he said, "I know that." I said, "Well, I didn't know that. I mean, I didn't know that." And I said, "And if you don't want to talk to me, I completely understand." The thing is this, when I left that townhouse I had to have, he was on the lease and it didn't get rented back out. So I owed lots of money. And I forgot, I didn't bother to tell him, you know, that I was going to owe this money. And he had a big bill and he was not happy. He has like perfect credit. I don't know how high your credit can be, but he's got it. He pays everything as soon as he gets it. He was livid because a collection agency had called him. So that was not a good thing. But he was still kind of mad about that. And finally I talked to him and he said, "Well," he goes, "why don't you come to Memphis and we'll talk about it." So I had to tell my mom and dad that I was going back to Memphis. And my mom was so mad at me. She called me every name in the book. My dad called me every name in the book. And they said, "You have created so much chaos in everyone's life. Why don't you just stop? Quit thinking about yourself so much." And I said, "You don't understand, though. You don't understand. I'm the problem." I mean, they all knew this. It was like such a surprise to me. But they all knew this. And I said, it's me. You know, it's me. So I went to Memphis, and we got back together. Oh, this is the thing about the money. I had spent all this money. We had a house before I left for Atlanta, and we sold it. And I'd spent all this money in Atlanta, and he was now living back at home with his mom, with his little girl. So, I wasn't very proud of that, and left him with that bill. So needless to say, when I came back to Memphis, his mom was livid. And when he told her I was coming back, her response was not very nice. And she was furious, absolutely furious. His brother would not talk to him for 3 years, his only brother. Only sibling. They were so mad that he took me back. But for some reason, you know, he trusted me and he was willing to try it. And we lived in this little two-bedroom apartment with my youngest son and his daughter. And it was the best time of my life. It was the best time of my life. I was going to AA every day. I had a sponsor. I was working the steps. I even had neck surgery during that time, and it still was a good time. It was just, I don't know, life. I guess I was being transformed. I guess all the things that were once important to me were no longer important, and I saw. Even though there was so much wreckage, it was okay. And I mean, it's so much better today, but even back then it was good, and I knew for the first time what unconditional love was. I'd been back to Memphis about a month, and it was my birthday, and nobody called me. And usually my family's really good about birthdays, and my sister sent me a card, and she said, "I hope you get everything you deserve in life." Now, you take that however you want to take it. So, but you know, I didn't get mad. I knew they were angry, and that was different for me too, because I used to get so mad at everybody. "Oh, you're just so wrong. You don't understand." I knew. So the first amend I made was to his mother for all this money that she had paid this guy off in Buckhead for. I had sold everything I owned, and it just happened to come to that amount of money. And when I made that amend to her, it changed. Things changed. She said, "You know, I appreciate your doing that." And I said, "Well, you know, I really wasn't to the amend part yet, but I knew I had to get that part done." The next thing I had to do was go to a family wedding with his family. Okay, now, his father the attorney, his brother that didn't speak to him, and a host of other people, and it was in Kentucky, so we went to Kentucky, and I talked to my sponsor. I said, "You know, I don't know if I can do this." And she said, "Take the St. Francis prayer with you." And it's November 21st in the Daily Reflections. It's also, I think, page 99 or 91 in the 12 and 12. She said, "Take the page out of that book and put it in your wallet, and every time you get upset, go to the bathroom and read it, and go be St. Francis." That was like magic. That really worked. I mean, it really did. She said, "And when you go to the wedding, remember why you're there, it's not about you. And that puzzled me too. I said, it's not? She said, no, it's not about you. You know, it's not about what people are saying about you. You're there to celebrate the marriage of someone. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I was so into me. And she was so patient with me about stuff like that. But I remember that night, you know, I had that little prayer, and I'd go in the bathroom, and I'd read it, and I'd come back out. And then a few minutes later, I'd go back in. But we left Kentucky that night, and it was good. It was like God got me through that. I started seeing that God really wasn't this bad guy, but he was really kind of getting me through some stuff. And the more that I applied spiritual principles in my life, the easier things got. Now, the road to Reconstruction was very long with his family and with my family, and I would have a hard time with it too. And when I got to the other amends part with his mom, I really had to think what I needed to make amends to her for. It's so bizarre to me today, but I thought, well, if I were a mom, I guess it would really bother me if my son, that happened to my son. I was like, okay, well, I do owe her an amends. You know, just putting myself in someone else's shoes, it was different. I don't know if maybe you all do that normally, but it wasn't normal for me. I was so into me and what I felt all the time. I was so self-centered, so selfish. And I'm so glad I couldn't see all that at once. You know, that's been revealed. It's been a process. And it's a good thing I didn't see it all at once. I think it would have just floored me. I guess that's why God continually reveals things. It says in the book that he will constantly, that word constant keeps coming up in the book. He constantly will disclose more to you. Constantly. So as long as I keep attuned with God, he will constantly disclose himself to me. So that's pretty cool. So anyway, we got his mom out of the way, and she, you know, it took a while. We had dinners and lunches, and she was still trying to test me, and, you know, she had never seen anybody recover. Her sister had died of alcoholism when she was in her 40s, and so she had lots of alcohol issues in her family, and she'd never seen anybody recover, so she didn't think, you know, sure, Christy says she's an alcoholic. She's going to come back here and create more chaos. So it was a long process. On my first birthday, she came and brought me a plant. And I remember there was an Ann Landers article. I don't even know if Ann Landers is still in the paper. Is Ann Landers still in the paper? Anyway, it was about a woman. And she said, my daughter is leaving her husband. He has an alcohol problem. And he says that he's going to AA. And should I force her not to see him or whatever? So my mother-in-law called me. She was all excited. She goes, we need to write a letter. I said, about what? And she said, it worked. AA worked for you and Lucius, you know. And I thought that was really cool because she was starting to see, you know, that it worked. That was a good thing. Eventually, his brother did talk to him again. Eventually, my parents talked to us again. And, you know, they love us now, which is huge. The relationship between me and my son is fabulous today, but it was a long road of reconstruction too. I had a lot of anger at my ex-husband's wife. I felt like she'd taken my husband and taken my son. I mean, I had so much resentment. And for 4 years, I don't know, I cried a lot. And I remember Louise used to say to me, honey, you're where you're supposed to be, and he's where he's supposed to be. And for some reason, that was comforting to me. I don't know. I felt like I was supposed to go out and grab him and take him back. But she kept telling me, no, you know, work on yourself. And if he's happy and well-adjusted, he's where he's supposed to be. But I didn't know how to be a non-conventional mom. So I had to think outside the box. I mean, I didn't even know what kind of toothpaste he used. And that was hard for me. But I would write him cards, and I would go to his open houses. And one time I went down there for his wrestling match. He had a big wrestling tournament at, I think, Montgomery Bell. So I went down there by myself. And he was wrestling, and he pinned this guy. And right when he pinned this guy, the stepmother walked in. And all the moms ran to her and said, did you see your son? And I thought a knife had gone through me. I thought I was sitting there watching like I was dead and had come back. And he had this new mom. And it stung. And I went out to my car, and I thought, can't breathe, I don't know what to do. And I called my sponsor, and she said, and she didn't have children, but she said, you will always be his mother. I said, yeah, I will. She goes, it doesn't matter what people call her or him, whatever. You will always be his mother, and nothing will ever change that. Now go back in there and be a mom. So I walked back in the school, and he was looking for me. Mom, I've been looking for you. And he was hugging me. And my sponsor also told me, don't bring it up. Just go in there and be a mom. So I focused on him, and we had the best day. We had the best day. And it was a long, painful process like that of learning, like going to open houses and not having, you know, not trying to say, I'm his mom. You know, it wasn't about me. It was trying to be part of his life, and that was hard. And I started learning what really unselfish love was like because he was happy there. And I had to learn that she really did love him. I mean, she was really good to him. And if he loved her enough to call her mom, and if I'm his mom, maybe I've got the problem. I wasn't there for him. I was drinking. You know, I wasn't that great of a mom at that time. And if I couldn't be the mom, at least he had somebody there that was. My ex-husband also sold his company. When Rush moved back in with them, he started going to church. And he decided he wanted to be a minister. Blew me away. He called one day and said, I took Rush to a Promise Keepers meeting. And I thought, well, did you stand up and tell him about not keeping promises? I didn't say that though. But he sold his business and he went to the seminary in Vanderbilt and now he's a minister. Huge. That is absolutely huge. And it was a good thing because my son got to see his father be a man of God. I couldn't give him that. No, I couldn't. His dad gave him things I could not give him as a role model and as different things. And he graduated. He is the happiest kid now. He's the happiest kid. But I used to worry, like, I would drive to Nashville, and I would get mad because they wouldn't meet me halfway in the very beginning. So my sponsor said, get over it. Drive to Nashville. Go get him. So I would go get him and bring him back to Memphis. And the blessing out of that was that I got to spend 3 hours with him in the car. Trapped audience. And we would laugh and have fun. But I used to think, gosh, when he gets married, maybe I won't be the one as the mom walking down the aisle. And my sponsor said, get back in today. You know, you're way out there. And on his 18th birthday, I went down to celebrate with him in Nashville. And he was so excited. He said, Mom, I've got a girlfriend. She's just like you. I can't wait for you to meet her. I thought that was so nice. And so we spent the day together, and we'd go through the mall, and he held my hand like a little boy, you know, holds his mom's hand. He was so happy to be with me. And we went out to eat sushi after, and driving home, it started snowing. It was in December. It started snowing, and all of a sudden, I got all these goosebumps all over me, and I realized that for all these years, I've been putting the future in God's hands, and he took care of it. And that was awesome for me. It was like all the days I'd worried about not having a relationship, and I kept saying, okay, God, you got it. You got it. Just, I'm going to trust you. That was a realization for me that he really did have it. I just had to do the right thing, and I had to get out of the way. The neatest thing about that whole relationship, and this is totally God, especially for you mothers, you will understand this. When he graduated from high school, his stepmom called me and said, why don't you have all your family here and we'll have a party together at our house? I was like, that would be awesome. And I hung up the phone. I thought, well, that's kind of strange, isn't it? You know, that we would do that together. But we did it, and my whole family came, and it wasn't weird. And I said, you know, have you ever appreciated someone but yet wanted to stick voodoo pin dolls in them? It's kind of how it felt. It's like this love-hate thing. But I remember we're sitting around the kitchen table, and I just felt, you know, thank God that my sponsor showed me the right way to do this. Because he grew up in a home, it was loving. I didn't yank him out. I didn't make his life disruptive. I just tried to stay out of the way when I needed to stay out of the way. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, you know, because I really love him. But we were all sitting around the table as graduation dinner, and I just remember, this was God speaking, not me. I said, maybe we can be a testimony to other blended families. You know, that this can work. And I meant it. It just came. I mean, I just felt love for this whole family. And to this day, his stepmother and I still talk. Even though he's in college at UT Chattanooga, we still talk. And so God has definitely mended that relationship because I had never felt such anger, such deep-seated anger at anyone in my entire life, and today I have none. I have no animosity. So that's a cool thing. God has definitely healed that relationship. The other relationship was with my dad, and I'll never forget the first day he told me that I was an inspiration to him. And just a few years before, he told me that I was a drunk and he was ashamed of me. That was huge for me. Lucius and I would go down for holidays and all that, and we were eating dinner one night, and my dad said, "I just want to tell you all how proud we are of you for putting this back together." And I said, "Oh no, we didn't put it back together. God put this marriage back together." And they all knew, because there's no way we could have put that marriage back together. It was so horrible. Today he is my absolute best friend. I mean, he's my absolute best friend. So that's another relationship that's changed. And that with my dad too. This past year I got to experience another family member going into recovery. My mom, she deals with eating issues, and she was basically eating herself to death. She used food like I used alcohol. And everybody wanted me to fix her. I said, "I can't fix her. It's an inside job." I learned from my grand sponsor that we're all God seekers, and anytime we seek something else to fill us, we get sick. That makes so much sense to me, because if we have a spiritual malady, nothing can ever fill that hole except for God, at least for me. Nothing can ever fill that hole. So my mom went to the Meadows in Arizona, and I got to experience, you know, a rehab. I was so excited because I've never been to rehab, and I finally got to go. You know, everybody talks about how great rehab is. But we went down for family week, and it was my sister and my dad and I went. And we're all real close today, but I remember sitting in the hotel room with them, and we were all talking, and my dad said, "I'm just so proud of you all," and just started talking about stuff. And I said, "Well, you know, at family week, we're going to talk about secrets and all that." I said, "I just want to know something." I'm what they call the truth teller in family week. I learned that too. I said, "Did you all have to get married?" And he goes, "Why does it matter?" And my sister started crying, and she said, "Because I always feel like I was the reason that you never had a life." They got married when they were 16. That you could have gotten a football scholarship. And he started crying. He goes, "No, the reason I never told you is because I never wanted you to feel bad." I mean, this has been almost 47 years this secret has been kept in our family. And we never knew when their anniversary was. We knew it was in the summer because they had short sleeves on. But my grandfather, who was a Baptist preacher, and his wife, my grandmother, they like marked out the date on the napkin and put December, you know, December. My sister was born in September, I guess exactly 9 months back. So we kind of knew something wasn't right. And but that was such a freeing moment for to see my sister and my dad, you know, because she felt like all her life that she was so responsible for all of us. She had to keep us all together because she was the problem. She was the reason that they had to get married. So that was huge. Then at family week, you know, I told you my dad was real verbally abusive, and he didn't really like to go to church. And what I found out about him was that he was religiously abused growing up, and that he used to have panic attacks going into church. And he cried telling this. He had kept this inside. My dad's a tough guy. He's 66 and a tough guy. He was a forest firefighter for fun, you know, just several years ago, you know. So he's a pretty tough guy. And he cried, and he goes, "I was always so ashamed to tell you all. I used to have panic attacks going in. So I never knew how a man of God could hurt a child. I didn't want a God like that." So it was just a very healing thing for all of us, because I got to understand my dad. And just like the St. Francis prayer says, you know, it's better to understand than to be understood. I understood my dad. I understood what he went through. And so all the stuff I went through with him, you know, I have no anger against him today. You know, we're all so close. My mom had resentments, and I think that's probably part of her, you know, she was trying to eat her way out of it. So they got that out in the open, and when they got back from the Meadows, my dad was bringing her flowers, and she said, "It's just like we're dating again." And you all don't know, it was a bad marriage. I mean, we used to pray they would get divorced. It was so bad. And now they're like little kids. And it's so neat. You know, the best thing I've ever seen is for my mom and dad to be in love and for my dad to look at my mom and just love her. And I never got to see that. You know, I never got to see that. And A month ago, my dad found out he was anemic, and so he went to the doctor. And they did some tests on him, and they said, you know, it's not from an iron deficiency or B12. So they did a bone biopsy, and they found out he has bone marrow cancer. So, I mean, that's been real tough. And my mom said, I don't know why God's doing this to me. And I got to tell her, he's not punishing you. You know, he's not punishing you. You know, thank God you went through what you did when you did, because now you can be there for him. You know, and God's going to work through this. And there's going to be blessings out of it. I know it. I can say it because I've experienced it. So we're all working together with my dad, and he's going to have a stem cell transplant at Vanderbilt. So I'll maybe come visiting some of you all in Nashville for meetings. So, he feels pretty good about it. And for the first time in my life, when I was back in Chattanooga, my mom and my dad and I prayed together. Never happened growing up. My mom said a prayer, my dad said a prayer, and I was just, my head was spinning. I couldn't believe it, you know. And then we read meditation books. You know, like we do when we're on retreats with women. That was so awesome. I got to experience, you know, recovery in my family. So that was really cool. This past week, I got to celebrate my 10th birthday at my home group. And in the second row were my father-in-law, the attorney, my mother-in-law, who wanted to kill me, my brother-in-law, who wouldn't talk to his brother for 3 years, and my sister-in-law and my husband. It could have ended right there. That was the icing on the cake for me. You know, this program works. It absolutely works. And for anybody that's going through any kind of family stuff, oh my God, I was the poster child. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, people look at me and say, well, if she can do it, anybody can do it. You know, God certainly did it. God certainly did it. And I'm so grateful to have had strong sponsorship, strong meetings. There's no way in the world I could have done anything without this program. It's taught me how to live. I mean, I knew what the Bible said, but I couldn't get it from here to here. And I didn't know what a loving God was. And when I came in here, you all told me, you get to choose your own conception of God. I was like, man, that's really, they don't say that in the Baptist church. I mean, they tell you exactly what he looks like and, you know, and what you got to do and how to get dunked and everything. And at first, it kind of seemed kind of scary to me, but Louise said, oh, honey, you can call him whatever you want to call him. She said, I first started calling him Sam. I'd say, Sam, get down here and help me. I said, really? She said, yeah, really. So I thought, well, she can do it. Nothing's happened to her. I can do it too. So she said, really, prayer is all you do is talk to God. So I learned how to do that. And to me, life's an adventure today. You know, going through that four step was so hard for me. It took me 3 years to get through my four step. I was so afraid to look at me. That's why I drank. I didn't want to know. You know, I was running. You know, moving, getting divorced, getting married, not wanting to look back. And so to look at that and finally doing it was so freeing to me. That's when I started being able to develop a relationship with people. I would go to meetings before that and I was terrified of people. My palms would sweat. I couldn't share. I was terrified. I didn't like women. All women wanted to do was take your husband, except with my experience. And, you know, really, it's not that way. You know, it's not that way. I was trying to live life based on what I thought I needed and never based on what I thought God wanted for me. And today I have a life of purpose, and that really excites me. I never had a purpose before, you know? And so I get to work with women, like one sitting here on the front row who has little girls, and I get to share what I've learned and see recovery in her family. To me, that is such a gift, such a gift. My children, you know, they were pretty young still, but I had done a lot of damage. And to see little kids grow up with a mom that's there and present and healthy and working the program, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. My two other children, Connor, he's 17. I never thought he would. He had lots of problems, auditory processing problems. We thought he was dyslexic. And I thought, you know, I shuffled him around from home to home, city to city, and, you know, If dad never sees him, I don't know what's going to happen. Well, today, he is a straight A student. He is almost an Eagle Scout working on his project. He is a chaplain of the Model UN. I mean, he loves life. He is the most outgoing kid. And when I was when he was 9 years old, I was so afraid. I still didn't tell my kids I was going to AA. I didn't know I was going to prayer meetings. I didn't know. I didn't want to damage them like they weren't already. But I remember I was talking to an alcoholic on the phone. I really wasn't paying attention that he was listening or anything. But I got off the phone, and he looked at me and goes, "I want to be just like you when I grow up." I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Because you help dogs and drunks. I rescue dogs." And he thought it was really cool that I was talking to drunks. You know, I thought, this program's really cool. You know, just what I thought would harm him. You know, he sees me with a purpose. He sees women come in my life, and he gets to see the miracle happen. And there's no greater gift. He had his prom last weekend. He called me from a party and said, "Mom, they're all drinking. I just want to talk to you." I said, "Okay, you want me to come get you?" "No, I'm fine. I just wanted to talk to somebody." I said, "Okay." So he calls back again. He said, "I'm just checking in." So the next morning he came in. He goes, "I just finally figured out, just so to deflect attention off of me, I would just be helpful." I said, "Okay, what'd you do?" He goes, "I held girls' hair out of their face so they wouldn't throw up in it, and I picked up beer cans." I said, "That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, just be a service." And just the fact that he can talk to me about it, that's great too. You know, I'm so blessed. I'm just so blessed. I'm so blessed that that God allowed me to be an alcoholic. I mean, I really do think it's a blessing. And all my life, I thought I was being punished. And what I've learned is that I had to go through all that stuff to have a purpose. I mean, maybe not all that stuff, but God has certainly used every single bit of it. Every single bit of it. I sponsor a woman who does not have custody of her daughter, who lives out of town. Never met another woman. I mean, I'm sure there's lots out there, but I've never worked with a woman like that. And she was going through a situation where she was going through this, should I go get her back? And I could share my experience, strength, and hope with her. In the book it says, you know, we can help others avert misery and death. That's it for me. You know, by sharing my story, I can help somebody else. And I get to see miracles, and God constantly discloses himself to me. My daughter, she's my daughter by marriage, but I consider her my daughter. She graduates from high school this year. And then my oldest son, Rush, he's a junior at UT Chattanooga. And we all love each other, and that's huge for me. I mean, I have everything I ever wanted and more. Everything. And it has nothing to do with outside stuff. It has nothing to do with money, anything. I have all the things in my life that are just priceless, you know, that God's given to me and more. I could not have written on my 10th birthday, I could not have even dreamed that 10 years ago, that they would all be sitting on the second row. You know, that was, and certainly people who've been through the program with me, for them to see that too, that the program works like that, it was absolutely huge. So anyway, I hope I didn't ramble too much, but you know, I'm so honored to be here. I came here a few years ago and was just blown away by all the sobriety here, and I'm so honored that you asked me. Thank you.